In this parsha, Parshas Vaera, begins to unfold the first time in human history where man, human beings, were witnesses to creation. Adam Arishayim, not nice to say, he woke up late. He woke up at the end of the sixth day. It's not his fault, that's when he was created. And because of that, there was no one alive who could testify to the creation. It's not quite obvious what he saw, what he woke up to, what he experienced, but there were no eyewitnesses. Eyewitness testimony is critical to knowledge. The first eyewitness testimony to creation took place in Mitzrayim and starts to unfold in this parsha, continues on in the next parsha. That is, Nisim Gluyim, miracles to the extent that no human being in his right mind could ever attribute to accident, to coincidence. Nisim Gluyim that were witnessed by millions of people and taught to their children, written down, passed down to future generations, and at least, no, it's actually all the time, every week, but certainly two times during the year, during Pesach and Sukkot, we dedicate specifically a celebration to remember the miraculous events and the miraculous way we lived in those days, as seen by and testified to millions of eyewitnesses. It was not only a national event, it was also a personal event. Chazal tell us that when it came to the Makkos, there were individual miracles that people experienced. For example, the miracle of a Jew and a Mitzri drinking from the same source of water, one drinking blood, one drinking water. Clearly, Hashem not only does broad miracles, broad strokes of creation, but deals with each individual. Standing in a room where the Mitzri would be frozen in a pillar of darkness, the darkness was so thick that he couldn't move, and his Jewish neighbor, looking around, seeing everything, getting an agenda for what he could pick up on the way out. And so not only did we see national miracles, large miracles for the entire nation, but even individuals saw Hashem's involvement in creation. And when blood and water come from the same source, and when frogs are jumping all around and jumping inside people's kishkes, and when there comes a Jew right over there, it just has no shaykhus to him. And when Choshech works this way, and all of the other makas, the clarity of vision to the Creator was beyond anybody's question. And that was the first time in history that there were eyewitness testimony to creation. Then, later, Hashem takes this pack of eyewitnesses, a few million nefoshes altogether, brings them to this little mountain in the desert, and introduces himself. Hey guys, remember what happened in Mitzrayim? Anochi Hashem Elokecha asher hotzeicha me'eretz Mitzrayim mibeis avodim. That's me. I'm the one. I'm letting you know that I am the Creator who exhibited His creative powers in Mitzrayim. And now I'm telling you why I created the world and what your purpose is and how you can better your own lives and how you can grow and how you can fulfill the purpose of creation and reach the highest levels of human perfection and human happiness through the plan and the program that I am giving you. And the Ramban tells us at the end of Parshas Bo that from these Nisim Gluyim, which took place, we learn to recognize the hidden miracles that are part and parcel of every moment of our existence, of every day of our life, that they are the most critical of the critical element in our lives, to the extent that he says that one who doesn't recognize the nisim nisorim, the little hashgocha protis, the hidden things that happen every day that almost look natural if you don't think about it, has no chelek b'toras Moshe, because that's what it's all about. It's all about Hashem's intimate, personal, detailed involvement in every aspect, in every dimension, in every move of our existence. Today happens to be the yahrzeit, excuse me, of an individual who was zoiche in his lifetime and in a major way days before he passed away to be a major supporter of one of the Moistas HaTorah in the valley. And his name was Gershon Reb Meir Beyer. And I just want to share with you, should be a schus l'idu nishmosoi, a little episode of his life that he told me. He happened to have been an eighth generation descendant of the Vilna Goyim. Very brilliant man, very fine, very special. And he told me as follows. He says, when he was a young teenager, maybe he was 18 at the time, it was the middle of the Bolshevik Revolution. The Bolsheviks were trying to bring down the czars, you know, the kingdom of Russia, and to take over and create their own government. And it seems his father was very close with the czar, and the Bolsheviks had it in for him and his family. And one day he walks into his house and he sees his mother pinned against the wall with a bayonet, those big guns with a knife at the end. The knife was pointed right at her throat. They were ready to eliminate her. He jumps in, tries to save his mother. Of course, there were a couple of thugs there, and he wasn't successful in terms of overpowering them. May have distracted them from his mother, but they captured him. They took him prisoner. They tried him. They made up this tribunal that they had, and they decided he was guilty of treason against this nascent government that I don't even think really existed at the time. And the punishment for treason is to be put to death. And tomorrow morning he's going to be shot to death. Comes the morning, a young man volunteers to do the honors, and he walks him out into the yard, and he's standing there with his gun ready to shoot him. And he, all of a sudden, he asks him a question. He says, "Do you remember me?" Like, "No, who are you?" And the would-be shooter, or the would-have-been shooter, tells him that a few years ago, we were in school together, and I was very poor, and I needed money to get a haircut, maybe to buy a shirt or something, and you gave me the money. I want to pay you back. Run for your life. Now, of all the people in the world who should be there at the time, assigned to shoot this man, to kill this man, was the one person in the world who had something positive that he wished to repay for. And of course, he saved his life, and he lived to a ripe old age. And in this story, he saw Hashem's involvement in my life in the most intimate way, in the, one might say, massive coincidence. But that doesn't work that way, because there's no coincidences. A coincidence like this to happen, and if you think that might be coincidental, then compare that to the millions and millions of such occurrences that have happened throughout the history. I remember when my kids were growing up, there was one story that I couldn't figure out why. They would want me to repeat to them as they were going to sleep at night again and again. I just remember, like, getting sick and tired of this story already, but it is a beautiful story. There was a, in one of the ghettos, there was a brother and a sister who were just trying to stay alive. And the Nazis had already taken away their parents. And the brother used to tell his sister that he's going to go out to look for food because there was nothing there. And she was a very pretty girl. And he said, you stay put, don't go out, because if the Nazis see you, you never know what might happen. So he's going out looking for food. He comes back and he sees his sister is not there. He did not believe that she would have defied his advice to go out on her own. So they must have found her. He goes to their headquarters, and this, they just describe in the story, this big comes out and says, yeah, what's your problem? He says, give me back my sister. Just like that. I don't know if just like that, but that's what he said. And this Nazi says to him, I'll give you back your sister when you grow hair in the palm of your hand. Like, you know, don't grow hair. The palms of the hand don't grow hair. This kid opens up his hand, full of hair growing out of it. And the Nazi goes out of his mind. He says, you guys, you're a witch. You're a this, you're a that. You don't know what to do. Take your sister, get out of here. I don't ever want to see you again. What happened? A few years before, he was working in a machine shop, and his hand got caught in a lathe, and they ripped the skin off. And in order to save him, the doctors took skin from his leg, which had hair on it, and grafted it onto the palm of his hand. Now, they told him that the hair will fall out, don't worry about it, son. But it didn't. And the insane, stupid, well, not insane, but the stupid comment that this Nazi makes, when you grow hair in the palm of your hand, to whom does he make such a concept? To maybe the one and only person in the world who happens to have hair in the palm of his hand, and saved his life and his sister's life. And the truth of the matter is that these acts, these episodes of Hashgacha Pratis, are the essence of our survival. We have survived. The greatest of all miracles is the survival of the Jewish people. And we have survived. Rabbi Yankov Emden swears by his life that the survival of Klal Yisrael and the Torah are greater than the miracles of Yetzias Mitzrayim and Kriyas Yamsuf. But we come to see these hidden miracles, the Ramban says, from the Yetzias Mitzrayim, from the blatant miracles of Mitzrayim. And therefore, when it comes to these parashiyos, I think that it's really important to pay attention, to imagine, to study the Medrashim. There's one fascinating Medrash which says that during Makas Arbe, when the locusts devoured the plant life, so if a Jew and a Mitzri happen to be partners in a tree, let's say, so if the Jew owned the roots, let's say the bottom, the roots, and the Mitzri, the fruit, whatever, so that the top part would be devoured, and the roots and the bottom, the trunk of the tree, would remain. What if it was the opposite? If the Mitzri owned the roots and the Jew, the branches and the fruit, says, well, then the roots would be devoured, and the tree would hang in suspension. Rootless, just, there's a fruit tree. There's no base for it. When you see blatant miracles like that, you begin to realize what life is all about. And therefore, I think it's critical for us to study these miracles, to review these miracles, to read the Medroshim which describe them, and to know that they were testified to by the millions of eyewitnesses. They were recorded for posterity, and they've been passed down from generation to generation to this very day. And in a few months, when we sit down to the Pesach Seder, and that's a specific time when there's a special chiyuv to review the Nisim v'Nifloyis that took place in Mitzrayim, we should learn from that not only the miracles of our past and the massive and blatant involvement of HaKadosh Baruch Hu in creation and in maintaining and assuring the deliverance of Klal Yisrael from Mitzrayim. But we should learn from that about the personal, individual miracles that take place every day, and I dare say every moment of the day. But we have to look for them. If we don't realize, if we don't recognize, if we don't look, if we don't focus, if we don't think, we may miss everything. And I just want to leave you with one little story. I was out in LA many years ago giving a seminar for non-religious people. And at the time, there was a young man there who was very enamored by the talk about tefillah and bitochon and Hashem's involvement in our lives. And he went home, like, inspired, uplifted. 6 months later, I was out here again for some follow-up lecture, and he comes over to me and said, I got to tell you a story. He said, I came back from the seminar Sunday night, very, very inspired. And my mother, who's a single parent, was very distraught. She had to marry off my sister, her daughter, on Thursday night, a few days hence, and she was short $15,000 for the wedding, and she had no idea what she was going to do. And I told her all about tefillah and bitochon and Hashem gets involved in our lives and things that she never dreamt of, she never heard of. But she was interested. She, you know, when your son teaches, so sometimes parents pay attention. What happened was the next day, she had a small costume jewelry business where you sell, you know, cheap jewelry for $15, $20 a piece. A woman walks in and she says, I want my money back, $20. This necklace that you sold me, I've come back five times to fix the clasp, it keeps breaking. I don't want you to fix it anymore. I want my money back, I had enough of this garbage. Okay, she gives her money back, it's not gonna make or break her, the 20 bucks. But she's very curious, like, what's going wrong over here all the time? So she takes it to her jeweler, she has a professional, and she says, could you please look at this? Why every time you fix it, does it keep on breaking? So he puts on his, whatever you call that little thing, and he looks and looks and looks and says, and just like this, not knowing anything, he says, I'll give you $15,000 for this piece of jewelry. This was not costume jewelry. This was the real stuff. It was worth $15,000. And if you recall, how much money did she need for the wedding on Thursday night? $15,000. And this kid tells me that he is sure that it's only because he opened his mother's eyes, and maybe his eyes, and taught her to look and to think and to begin to realize that Hashem takes care of everything in this world. That's why he was able to be zeicha to that. And certainly, I would add, that's why he was able to see it as the Yad Hashem rather than a coincidence. So I think that that's what we have to pay attention to. And the more we look, the more we're aware, the more we open our eyes and we focus, the more amazing miracles we will see. Have a good Shabbat.